Hey, everybody, this is Al Letson, host of Reveal, and this is the time of year that we come to you and ask for your support. Every week on Reveal, we give you something you can't get anywhere else: investigative reporting with engaging storytelling. We've got a pretty big newsroom here, and every day, all the reporters are out trying to find stories that really reveal what is happening behind the scenes. In order for democracy to work, it needs people who do this kind of work. And in order for that to happen, we need people like you who can make a difference to our organization. Anything that you could contribute, $10, $25, $50, $100, anything would make a real difference in the work that we do. So please, go to revealnews.org/donate or text DONATE to 63735. And without further ado, here is this week's episode.
Reveal is supported in part by HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates delicious new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone, from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. All delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code REVEAL when you subscribe. Reveal is also supported by Wonder Capital. What if you could help combat global climate change and make money at the same time? Introducing Wonder Capital, the award-winning online investment platform that allows individuals to invest in solar energy projects across the U.S. Wonder's online investment platform allows you to earn up to 8.5% annually while diversifying your portfolio, curbing pollution, and combating global climate change. And best of all, Wonder Capital doesn't take any fees for investing your money. Create an account for free at wondercapital.com/reveal. Wonder Capital. Do well and do good.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. New Orleans is a town where culture takes place in public. Parades, second lines, festivals, just about every week here, folks gather in large groups to listen to music and dance, and often follow a band down the street. When people come together like this, it can spark a great time, or...
It's like we got multiple people shot in the park.
Okay, simple. I'm
that spark can light a wildfire.
Jack, come out of court real quick. Jack, out of court. Here.
November 2015, a few nights before Thanksgiving, it was a Sunday just after sunset. A few hundred people had gathered in a playground called Bunny Friend Park. There were DJs and music, and a little after 6 p.m., people started getting rowdy. Then shots rang out.
It was like actually like a war.
Millions of people falling, machine guns, all type of guns.
This young college student, who also worked full-time, had come to Bunny Friend Park with a friend to check out the DJs. She asked us not to use her name because she's afraid someone involved in the crime will come after her. When the shooting started, she tried to run.
It was fenced off and it had exits, but they had people standing in exits shooting, so it was very, very intense. I guess it was kind of like a rushing pain, like my leg felt very heavy. Like more than the other league, so that's what made me look down. And I noticed I had like puddles of blood.
17 people were shot. Now, no one was killed, but it shook New Orleans up. The Bunny Friend shooting was all over the news. It was one more reminder of how bad crime is in the city. Independent producer Eve Abrams has been reporting in New Orleans for 9 years. She was following the shooting and what happened when the police made their first arrest. That arrest would have huge and unexpected ripple effects that would go way beyond the shooters and the victims. Here's Eve.
5 days after the shooting, the New Orleans police identified their first suspect, a 32-year-old man named Joseph Allen. And that same morning, the day after Thanksgiving, private defense attorney Kevin Boucher went into work. I met Boucher at his office outside New Orleans. It was weird. It looked like a motel converted into office suites. We sat down at a big table in the conference room lined with books so he could tell me this whole story.
Can you walk us through the Joseph Allen case from the very
beginning? Absolutely. Absolutely. No problem.
This is how Boucher sounds almost all the time, like he's in the middle of putting out a fire.
All right. The scoop. Let's see.
He's slight with curly gray hair and glasses. He's been a lawyer for over 3 decades.
I have, almost without exception, worked the day after Thanksgiving. The phones don't ring. The clients aren't banging on the doors. It's quiet. It's peaceful. It's beautiful.
But this day, Boucher's phone was ringing when he walked in. On the other end of the line was a former client, Joseph Allen. Boucher reenacted the call for me. He got really into it.
Kev?
Yeah.
This is Joseph. Yeah? This is Joseph Allen. Yes, sir? Now, I figure this can't be a social call. There's something wrong, but I don't know what it is.
Boucher knew Allen. He'd represented him before, getting him out of prison and on parole. So Boucher wasn't too happy to hear what Allen said next.
I'm wanted. For what, Joe? The thing. What thing? The thing. What thing? You know, the bunny friend thing. Expletives deleted. You can't be serious. Kevin, I'm telling you, I didn't do it. I wasn't there. I didn't do it. I wasn't there. Where are you? Houston. Get your behind back here right this minute.
Boucher had worked really hard to get Allen out on parole before. So the next day, when Allen made it to his office, Boucher was annoyed. This is how you repay me?
You know, being involved in the worst that you're charged with 17 counts of attempted second-degree murder. Holy guacamole. Come on. And he says, but Kevin, I've got proof. I've got proof. He starts showing me receipts.
From Walgreens, Walmart, the Burlington Coat Factory, all from stores in Houston from the same day as the shooting. Allen told Boucher he was shopping with his pregnant wife. The problem was, he paid for everything in cash. None of the receipts had his name on them. Boucher knew the prosecutors would say Allen's receipts proved nothing.
Well, where's the video, they will ask. And so I sat back and I turned to Joseph and said, Joseph, this is good, but it's not good enough.
Boucher was on the case. But in the meantime, he had to bring Allen to the police station where he was booked. The next morning, Boucher gets on the phone with a private investigator in Texas. He's racing against the clock. He needs to get his hands on security camera footage, something that will prove his client was in Houston and not in New Orleans at the time of the shooting. He knows stores record over their videos on the regular, so Boucher tells his detective.
Failure is not an option here, right? We've got to have it. Well, I'm having this problem. I don't want to hear it. We had to have it, and we had to get it quickly.
And they got it.
It would have been December 7th at 8 o'clock in the evening. We've got the video.
Security camera footage from multiple stores in Houston. Joseph Allen had been arrested based on the word of a single eyewitness. Now Boucher had proof that Allen couldn't possibly be one of the Bunny Friend shooters, a legal ace in the hole.
So now I'm not relying on a guy who's got a record or his wife, who's going to quote, according to the DA, lie and say whatever needs to be said, or paper receipts that don't show a credit card that they will argue are fabrications. Now I got it here.
Boucher shows up at court the next day for Allen's hearing. He's ready to go. He's got his video. He figures the DA will charge Allen. And it's a pretty informed hunch, because Boucher used to work for the district attorney's office.
This administration, basically, they charge everything. You know, we know that.
The DA is aggressive. He accepts almost every case the police bring his office, around 90% of the cases. So what happened next was surprising. The assistant district attorney prosecuting the case stood up and said, at this time, the state dismisses all charges against Joseph Allen.
Kaboom. And that was it.
But Boucher didn't quite trust that the DA was done with Allen.
So we tried the case on the streets of the city. We wanted the public to see with their own eyes what we had seen with our own eyes.
So Boucher set up a TV on the courthouse steps, and the news cameras followed. Here's New Orleans WDSU News.
Right now, we're actually looking at video of Joseph Allen and his wife, Valencia, when they were in Houston, Texas, on the day of that shooting. Surveillance video shows they were shopping. They
started. Joseph Allen's mother, who'd been on TV before defending her son, took the mic.
I am so thankful to the DA for dropping these charges. That when I told y'all that my son wasn't there, plenty of people thought I was lying, just trying to protect him. He was not there.
It was a huge relief for Joseph Allen and his family. But that whole saga of Allen, his lawyer Boucher, and the video footage, all of that was the last straw for someone else. A guy named Derwin Bunton. He's the man responsible for defending everyone in New Orleans who's too poor to afford a lawyer. When Derwin saw Joseph Allen go free, it made him rethink his job and his role in the justice system. He knew he had to do something big. Eve Tro of WWNO in New Orleans. That's right, we have two Eves on this episode. Takes the story from here.
That video footage of Joseph Allen played on the courthouse steps was all over the news. Derwin Bunton couldn't help but watch.
I am the chief public defender for Orleans Parish.
In Louisiana, a parish is what we call a county, basically.
How long have you had this job?
I have had this job now for 7 years.
Feels like how many years?
I joke with my friends, it's like dog years.
Derwin leads a team of 50 or so lawyers who defend poor people. In New Orleans, pretty much everyone arrested is poor. The office had 20,000 cases last year. For a guy with so much responsibility, Derwin, tall, calm, always in a suit, has an easy laugh, too. Like when I ask if I can watch a case in court, he points to my microphone.
I'm not going to let you bring that in.
Oh, I understand. I have no illusions about that. It has been made very clear that there is no recording in any Louisiana courtroom.
No recording in court, which makes this whole story more difficult to tell you, because we're about to dive into the world of Louisiana's court system. So what you won't hear is the courtroom drama, where public defenders face off against district attorneys, the prosecution. Public defenders are there to uphold the Sixth Amendment. You know that whole, you have a right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. But Derwin says that's been hard to do for his thousands of clients, because his budget kept getting cut.
2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. I'm like, okay, this is a trend.
He's had to fire lawyers. That means everyone left gets more cases. Often, they barely get to meet with clients, much less hire private investigators to chase evidence.
You're not serving your clients your best when you are handling cases twice over the national standard.
Here's how the mass shooting at Bunny Friend Park fits in. When Derwin watched Joseph Allen, the man accused, go free, he thought, what if that man didn't hire a private attorney? If he hadn't called Kevin Boucher? If he couldn't afford to pay a lawyer? Derwin's office would have defended the case.
I looked at that case as it played out. And at the end of that case, I thought to myself, I'm not sure we would have made it to Houston on time. I'm not sure we would have made it to that footage before it was discarded or overwritten or erased, as a lot of that footage is nowadays. Even though it's out there, it doesn't remain forever. And if you move slow, then you're going to miss this very important evidence.
Derwin says it would have been hard, maybe impossible, for him or his public defenders to move as fast as private defense lawyer Kevin Boucher. Derwin thought if he had to defend Joseph Allen and didn't get that tape,
that man would have been on trial for what would have been effectively his life, based on the alibi of his mom and the mother of his child, which would have immediately been discredited by the district attorney, his folks who love him. Of course, they're saying he wasn't there, but he actually wasn't there.
This innocent man easily could have gone to jail for decades. It shook Derwin. This was January 2016. Derwin called an all staff and made an announcement.
I told my leadership team, I told my staff, we're not going to be complicit in that. And that's when we made the decision, you know, we're going to start refusing cases, not just a sort of wait list, but we're going to say, no, these are not our cases.
He began to refuse cases, some cases that needed lots of time and attention, ones with high stakes.
The armed robberies, the rapes, the murders, a lot of the sex offenses.
If his office doesn't have the time or resources to do it right, they won't take a case, especially those really serious cases, what they call level 5.
Say, for example, a murder comes in. That would be what we call a level 5 case. Then we'd have to give that to a level 5 lawyer. If we don't have a level 5 lawyer with room on their caseload, we'll refuse that case.
Since January, his office has refused hundreds of cases to be sure they can defend the clients they do have. Better to make people wait than risk someone innocent going to jail. But refusing some cases is not the same as a strike. Derwin wants to be clear.
I'm like, a strike is when you're not doing work you can do to prove a point. This is work we cannot constitutionally, ethically, and professionally do. This is not a strike.
When Derwin's office started refusing cases, there were consequences. For one, hundreds of people accused of serious crimes were left in limbo with no legal representation, which got the attention of the American Civil Liberties Union.
We started hearing that there were people who were going to be sitting in jail without the lawyers that they have the constitutional right to have. And from our standpoint, it doesn't matter why they're not getting lawyers. They're not getting lawyers.
Derwin's office gets sued and other ripple effects. That's coming up on Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. We just met Derwin Bunton. He's the chief public defender in New Orleans. His office is there to defend anyone who can't afford a lawyer. In New Orleans, that's almost everybody. 85% of all criminal cases. But the thing is, Derwin's funding has been cut every year for the past 5 years. At the end of 2015, he realized he couldn't do the job. His office just didn't have enough lawyers to defend the people that needed them. So he took action. Derwin started refusing some cases, leaving hundreds of people accused of crimes just stuck. Some of them were waiting in jail for months.
And that's really the low point for me in this, is knowing that there's people on the other end of this. There's families on the other end of this looking for access to justice. But I'm not able to provide everybody with access to justice. And I know what that means.
It means some people facing serious charges are left in limbo with no legal counsel. Eve Troll of WWNO found a guy like that.
It was January when Derwin started refusing cases. That same month, this man you're about to meet was involved in a situation with a woman who called the cops. He was arrested on charges of attempted second-degree rape and simple battery. He went to jail. The arrest upended his life.
I ended up actually losing my job that I had been on for almost a year. It was retail, and that was actually in management.
His retail management job counted him as a no-show. He hasn't been able to get steady work since. We're not using his real name because he's afraid his arrest record might keep him from getting a new job. We'll call him John. In jail, he also worried about his mom.
My mother suffers from dementia. I was her sole provider. It was very stressful just wondering if or what would happen to my mom not taking the medication.
John didn't even know if anyone else in his family actually knew he was in jail. No public defender came to see John. No one talked to him about his case or helped contact family or his boss. The first time he talked to a lawyer was when he was brought to court for what's called first appearances. There's a tiny booth in the courtroom where he spoke briefly with a public defender behind a plastic window.
It was like a 5-minute at the most conversation.
Remember, there's no recording in court, but here's what first appearances look like. A group of inmates, almost always all black men, stand in orange prison jumpsuits, shackled. The judge asks them each to stand and say out loud what they do for a living, how much they make, who they take care of at home. The inmates mostly seem confused about why the judge is asking these very personal questions. It's uncomfortable. But what the judge is doing is deciding whether they're too poor to afford a lawyer and can get a public defender. John remembers his judge urging another guy to avoid the public defenders.
A guy was in there for some more serious accusation. The guy said that he wasn't able to afford a lawyer. And the judge, like, adamantly said, you have to get your lawyer in this case. From just hearing that, I knew that dealing with a public defender, I wouldn't have anyone working, being able to spend the time on my case that I would like someone to spend on it.
John spent about a week in jail before his family scraped together $4,000 to pay a bail bondsman. But once he got out, John lost his spot with the public defenders. He didn't know this, but he was on the wait list. People stuck waiting in jail were ahead of him, so he just waited for his court date. Without a lawyer.
I did try to contact a few lawyers to represent me, and they ranged basically around $10,000 that I didn't have.
$10,000 just to get started.
Right, just to get started, right.
John didn't know what to expect in court. Should he wear his Sunday best? Would he even get to go home that day? Or would the court decide to detain him and send him right back to jail?
I just had to basically go on faith.
Nothing happened. The judge said, come back in 30 days. John did. Then the judge said, come back if you get something in the mail. Then, more nothing. When I called John, he hadn't heard anything in 8 months.
Even to this day, I didn't know where the case was. So really, I'm kind of tiptoeing through life, you know, not wanting any police interaction and avoiding any type of confrontation. Just in regular interacting with people.
The state had dropped the more serious attempted rape charge. That was months ago in June.
How did you find out that the charges were dropped?
Actually, you confirmed that the charges were dropped.
So no one ever told you what happened. You just never heard back. You never got a letter in the mail saying the charges were accepted, but you also never got anything saying that they were dropped.
Nothing.
No one had told John. The battery charge seems to have been kicked down to municipal court. John asked me what that meant. Was he cleared? I didn't know. I'm not a lawyer. All I had was an email saying the felony charge was dropped.
Are you able to send me a copy of that?
Yeah, sure.
Hey, whatever information you have on me, I appreciate that. I appreciate it.
Just as John didn't know what was going on with his case, the public defender's office didn't know either. Because they'd refused the case, no one was tracking it. We told Derwin Bunton what his decision did to John's life.
What should have happened is he would have been assigned a lawyer very early on, and then looking into his case to perhaps get the charges dismissed or refused faster. And of course, to keep him apprised of the status of his case at every change. So, and more information for not just him, but for his family as well.
This is the standard Derwin wants to meet, but he says he just can't. No time, not enough lawyers, hence the slowdown. And yeah, that means some people wait longer or get no help at all.
There's more and more of those families being touched by this. And I think that's tragic, and it's really hurtful for me and the rest of my staff.
But this heavy conscience doesn't help the people waiting. When Louisiana's American Civil Liberties Union learned about the public defender's wait list, ACLU lawyer Marjorie Essman said, not okay.
We started hearing that there were people who were going to be sitting in jail without the lawyers that they have the constitutional right to have.
Right after the wait list started, Essman filed a lawsuit in federal court on behalf of several men whose cases got refused.
And from our standpoint, it doesn't matter why they're not getting lawyers. They're not getting lawyers. And what people don't always realize is that because of the Sixth Amendment constitutional right to counsel, if we can't defend, we also can't prosecute. Because anybody who says, I want a lawyer, has the right to have a lawyer. And that means they can't be prosecuted. You know, the backlog in the courts is going to be massive.
Derwin knows that, and he actually welcomes this lawsuit because it could draw attention to what he sees as a deeply unfair system.
poor people justice is the same as rich people justice. And what I do hear a lot from some stakeholders and decision makers is I'm fighting for a Cadillac system, and poor people don't deserve a Cadillac. Criminal justice system don't deserve a Cadillac defense. And all the people who say that have yet to define for me what that means. I don't know what I'm asking for that's extra.
Derwin's not jamming the gears so he'll be able to offer a Cadillac defense, he says. He's doing it to keep his office running, to avoid a total breakdown of justice. All over the country, public defenders are overburdened, and there's no place worse than Louisiana. Lots of parishes here are in crisis. They have too many cases and not enough time, yet the stakes are really high. Will Snowden is one of Derwin's public defenders in New Orleans. He's tall, slender, with a neatly trimmed beard. He works two blocks away from the courthouse in a dingy, fluorescent-lit office building.
So the wait list has been, you know, fortunate for me, but terrible for my clients or potential clients because they've been sitting in jail without a lawyer.
The professional standard is lawyers shouldn't take more than 150 felony cases a year. Before Derwin's slowdown, Will had 255 felonies in 2015. That would give him about one business day to put together a defense for murder, rape, or armed robbery. One business day.
I used to have nightmares about my clients going to prison because I failed to do something.
He's talking literal nightmares.
Like waking up in the middle of the night, like, oh, did I file this motion for this client or did I do this? Or, you know, the person is facing 20 years to life for a nickel bag of weed and it's set for trial. What am I going to do? How is this possible? Like, what is going on? What can I do to stop it? And you try to go back to sleep. You end up closing your eyes and sitting there, but your mind is just racing and you're thinking, well, did I do this? Did I do that? And then you get mad at yourself for not doing certain things.
Will and a lot of public defenders here are driven by a mission. Their office is like the Peace Corps for lawyers.
We simply are locking up too many black people. And that's one of the reasons why I came to New Orleans to be a public defender.
On Will's office walls, there are pictures of him with former clients. And in the corner is a clothing rack full of suits for his clients to wear to court, so they're not in orange jumpsuits. Will's been doing this 3 years. He says he used to be in the office 7 days a week, just trying to get through his cases. Things are better under the wait list. But he's troubled by all the people waiting.
Right. If we're here to accept these cases and to represent these people, and procedurally we're not allowed to do that, it just kind of questions your existence as a public defender. The emotional experience is shame.
This is not the goal of the slowdown. What Derwin ultimately wants is reasonable caseloads for his lawyers like Will and to be able to defend everyone who needs their help. For that, he needs not just more money. He would actually need the entire system for how his office gets its money to change. Derwin says that's because the bulk of the funding for public defense in Louisiana comes from a really weird source. It's traffic tickets.
Rolling through a stop sign, speeding in a school zone, all the sort of moving violations, there is a public defender fee attached when you pay that ticket.
So run a red light, and part of that money you owe goes to pay a lawyer for, say, someone accused of armed robbery. It's odd and unstable. You never know how many traffic tickets will get written each month. I asked Derwin, so why traffic tickets? He didn't know. Lots of people I asked didn't know. We found a longtime Louisiana lawyer, Walt Sanchez. Who knows? Over the phone, he explained, the Louisiana legislature came up with this in the 70s.
The funding scheme was simply the path of least resistance. There wasn't any real in-depth thought put into how do we come up with a stream of income that actually meets the needs of the given parish.
It was a punt, a way to fund an unpopular issue, lawyers for accused criminals. And that funding was kind of left to traffic patterns.
So if you had a parish that had a stretch of interstate through it, you generally had a pretty reasonable level of funding or a consistent stream of funding.
Because a major highway means more traffic tickets. No interstate? Your poor people don't get as strong a defense if they get arrested. so uneven. Now, some other states also use traffic ticket money to help pay for public defense, kind of an extra slush fund. But Louisiana uses traffic tickets as the main funding source, and that causes chaos, says James Dixon. He runs Louisiana's State Public Defender Board in Baton Rouge. He points to this year's devastating floods as a perfect example. An emergency shelter was set up right by his office when we talked. Any district that flooded this year is in for big problems funding public defense.
You have districts that rely primarily on traffic tickets for their funding. Flooding takes that out of the equation. No sheriff in his right mind or her right mind is going to emphasize traffic tickets during a disaster. I mean, no citizen would expect them to, and I certainly don't. So traffic tickets are going to plummet in every single one of those districts.
So Baton Rouge police write fewer traffic tickets because they're busy with more serious issues right after the flood. And all of a sudden, the public defender sees a drop in money, can't afford to pay an expert witness, can't hire a private investigator, can't work up as strong a case for a client. Here's another problem. When Louisiana created this system, it also created a public defender fee. Derwin Bunton hates that.
So if you're deemed eligible for the public defender's office, the first thing is you owe me $40. There's a application fee.
We just saw a guy in the lobby trying to pay that.
$40. Now, once we have your case and we carry it through resolution, if you're found guilty or you plead guilty, then you owe us another $45. That's the public defender fee.
If you're guilty, you pay $45 for your lawyer. If you walk free,
you owe nothing. If you pay attention to that, folks quickly realize we get paid to lose. Because if we get your case dismissed or you're acquitted, the office receives nothing. If you're found guilty or plead guilty, we receive another $45.
Public defenders have told me they get clients who look them in the eye and say, "You're paid to lose." James Dixon says that's awful.
That is a horrible optic. I mean, I can tell you, public defenders, it does not affect how they work at all. But the problem is there is a grain of truth behind it, and that makes it very difficult to deal with the client. And when a defender has trouble communicating with his client, everybody suffers. And I mean everybody. It undercuts the court. It undercuts the credibility of the court because they're seen as just being part of a process. It is just a horrible, horrible way to fund a public defense system.
Public defenders in Louisiana want a baseline of stable, guaranteed funding. No more of this user pay system where guilty verdicts get them more money and their ability to do their jobs well depends on how many people get caught speeding. Derwin's slowdown in New Orleans is causing problems, getting attention. But in a state with a looming $1.7 billion budget gap, where even schools and hospitals are on the chopping block, getting extra millions to defend people accused of crimes seems a long shot.
In Louisiana, public defenders are not funded nearly as well as the police, the courts, and district attorneys. That means when public defenders show up in court, they're always the underdogs. Coming up next, the prosecution weighs in.
I can't see myself, if the shoe was reversed, I can't see myself saying to the citizens of the city of New Orleans, listen, we're not going to be able to prosecute the case that a victim brings to us or some police officer brings to us because we just don't think we have the funding to effectively prosecute the case. I can't, in all fairness, I cannot let budget constraints affect my ability to operate this office.
You're listening to Reveal.
Hey folks, Cole Goins here from Reveal. If you're in the Bay Area, we have a special event coming up on Thursday, December 15th. To celebrate the second year of a class we teach with the California College of the Arts, we're hosting a night of animated documentary short films at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. We'll feature original animations from students in our class, along with a variety of excellent documentary shorts from around the world. The best part? Tickets are free. You just need to RSVP and reserve your seat. To do that, visit our website, revealnews.org/events. That's revealnews.org/events.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. We've been telling the story of New Orleans Chief Public Defender Derwin Bunton. After a mass shooting in New Orleans in 2015, the Bunny Friend Park shooting, Derwin realized something big. 17 people were shot that night. The wrong man was accused, but his private lawyer found evidence that freed him. Derwin realized his office might not have been able to prove that man's innocence. They were simply too overloaded. So Derwin made moves to lighten their load. His office started refusing cases, backing the court up and leaving some clients waiting in jail. We're going to pick up the story with the prosecutor, not just of the Bunny Friend case, but of every case in Orleans Parish. Here's independent producer Eve Abrams.
New Orleans District Attorney Leon Canizero looks straight out of central casting from Law & Order. Crisp white shirt, tie, neat and tucked. Also very old school. He answered many of my questions like this.
Yes, ma'am, I do. I have no objection. Certainly, I want them to have the necessary funding.
Canizero has been watching from the other side of the courtroom ever since Derwin Bunton started refusing cases. Remember, Derwin's argument is that the public defenders don't get enough money to provide all their clients with a constitutional defense. But Canizero's not buying it.
Well, I disagree with that. I think that they certainly have been extremely effective in that courtroom, and I know because we have to do battle with them on a daily basis.
No matter how effective Derwin's attorneys are, their budget is way smaller than the DA's. Last year, around $6 million to the DA's $12 million. That's not exactly apples to apples, though. The DA's office does a lot more stuff than just argue court cases. And Canizero says he needs more money, too. In fact, his budget for next year was just cut.
In the criminal justice system, especially in the city of New Orleans, all of the participants in the criminal justice system are woefully underfunded.
Which is true, but it's especially bad for the public defenders. In order to do public defense right, Derwin told me he needs to double his funding. If you've ever been to a courthouse, you've probably seen a statue of Lady Justice. She's that Greek goddess-looking woman, the one blindfolded and holding a scale. She's meant to symbolize the balance in our judicial system, the truth that emerges when opposing sides are equally matched. If Canizero's funding was ever as unstable as Derwin's, would he do what Derwin did? Would he ever refuse to prosecute cases?
Do you have to think about, oh, is there space in the budget, or is that not something that you really think about?
I can't see myself, if the shoe was reversed, I can't see myself saying to the citizens of the city of New Orleans, listen, we're not going to be able to prosecute the case that a victim brings to us or some police officer brings to us because we just don't think we have the funding to effectively prosecute the case. I can't, in all fairness, I cannot let budget constraints affect my ability to operate this office.
And in the case of the Bunny Friend shooting, he didn't. When it came to investigating their first suspect, the guy we heard about earlier, the DA didn't let budget constraints get in the way. Canizero used his resources, his investigators. And remember that security camera footage? Well, the DA's investigators found that too. It proved the suspect was in another city at the time of the shooting. And that's why, the DA says, they never pressed charges. But in the weeks that followed, the district attorney went on to charge 10 other people in the shooting. Four of those people got their lawyers through the public defender's office. It's late summer, and I'm in Will Snowden's office, the public defender who had nightmares about his caseload.
He's now representing one of the Bunny Friend defendants, Malik Johnson, who faces 8 charges, firing a gun, among others. The police arrested Malik because another defendant said Malik was at Bunny Friend the night of the shooting and identified Malik from a photo lineup. Malik's a little hard to reach because he's not in the New Orleans jail. He's in a jail in the northeastern corner of the state, next to Arkansas.
Hi, Sheila. My name is William Snowden from the Orleans Public Defender's Office. I had scheduled a attorney-client phone visitation today with my client Malik Johnson at 2 p.m.
Oh, mercy, I didn't even get that. Where'd you fax it to?
I faxed it yesterday to 318-559.
Malik was moved from New Orleans because of issues with the city jail, which has been under a federal consent decree since 2013, meaning there were so many problems in the jail, poor mental health care, inmate violence, and inmate deaths, that the Department of Justice stepped in. Will says still, all the time, his clients tell him how violent the jail is and about all the weapons.
Shanks and shivs and knives, and the terror is very, very real. It's very palpable. And I have clients who say, listen, we may get 1 hour outside of our cell, but I just shower and do what I need to do and go back because it's more safe in my cell.
To reduce the number of people behind bars, a brand new, much smaller jail opened in the fall of 2015. But the sheriff claims it's too small, so he's moved hundreds of people, like Malik, who are awaiting trial in Orleans Parish, to jails in other parts of the state.
Thank you for calling the Riverbend Detention Center. For English, press 1.
Hundreds of defendants are now being held hours and hours away from their families and their attorneys. Several of Will's clients are 4.5 hours away in East Carroll Parish, which means Will can't see them.
I'm not going to drive to East Carroll Parish. I have a 2001 Mercury Sable, and I need to change the brakes on it. I'm just not going to do that drive.
He can't. Will has to be in court in New Orleans every weekday. Visiting just one client in East Carroll Parish would take around 9 hours round trip, just with driving. So to get to know those clients, Will has to call them on the phone. But that brings up a whole other problem. Will isn't sure who else is listening.
Because the prompt that happens in the beginning, you know, is that the call is going to be recorded. And that prompt kind of happens maybe every 5 minutes. You'll get a reminder in the middle of the conversation that the call is being recorded.
Will's talking about the New Orleans jail here. And the person he's worried might be listening is the DA.
They have pretty much unfettered access to those jail calls. And they, you know, listen to them to see if they can find anything that's useful.
The calls to his clients in East Carroll Parish aren't supposed to be recorded, but Will doesn't trust that no one's listening. But still, in order to speak with Malik, it's the only option. After 4 phone calls and 2 different kinds of hold music,
hold on till committee.
Thank you.
Will finally gets through to his client.
Hello?
Hi, Malik?
Yeah.
Hi, this is your lawyer, William Snowden. I'm good, how are you?
Malik was 17 when he was arrested. He's 18 now. He's been in jail for over 10 months waiting for his trial. 10 months.
You know, I'm just ready to go home to my family.
Will says when you have a client as young as Malik, even though he's legally considered an adult, he's still very much a kid. So Will got in touch with his mom. And he went back to Bunny Friend Park to gather evidence for Malik's defense.
This is a picture of the basketball court. It's a picture of the bathroom, scoreboard, so that I can get a general understanding when the detective is testifying. I know what he's talking about. And if he's saying that this witness saw this particular individual at this location, I'm going to be able to say if that's possible or not.
Will says preparing for a case is an infinite task. There's always more to do. Motions to file, case laws to brush up on, detectives to subpoena, school records to look at, and endless people to interview. I asked Malik how he feels about his lawyer.
He's about his business.
He's about his business?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
That means he focused. Like, he focused on your case, and he's gonna get it right. He focused on everything he do.
Malik used to think public defenders worked with the prosecutors. They didn't care about defending clients like him. But now, having Will represent him, Malik's entire picture of public defenders has changed.
Or did I help you? Did I get a regular paid lawyer?
They're a regular paid lawyer, is that what you said? like a lawyer you would hire, not get for free. This is how the public defense system is supposed to work, with public defenders who have the time to do just as good a job as private attorneys. It's what Derwin Slowdown is all about, providing clients with a solid defense, no matter how much it gums up the works. But in a lot of places, that's not what happens, according to Ilham Askia. She's the executive director of Gideon's Promise, a national organization that supports public defenders out of Atlanta, Georgia.
What we have found across the country is that although people go into the work to help people, they quickly are burnt out or tired or are so under-resourced that they leave the job or fall victim to processing people through the system and not effectively advocating for their clients.
Processing people through the system. In other words, keeping the system going, barely meeting with clients, resolving their cases as quickly as possible, and then moving on to the next. Most public defenders can't escape this pressure to keep things moving.
And so what happens is clients get arrested. They may sit in jail trying to make bond, and many of our clients cannot, and they want to go home. And so a person could be not guilty of the crime they're accused, but knowing that they will sit and languish in jail, possibly losing their job, losing the rights to their children, losing subsidized housing if they stay any longer. And so what often happens is that they take pleas.
Plea deals. Even if they're innocent, they plead guilty and in exchange get a lighter sentence or avoid jail entirely. Nationally, around 95% of criminal convictions come from plea deals. Just last month, the district attorney's office offered a one-time plea deal to several defendants in the Bunny Friend case, including Malik. Here's the deal the DA offered. Plead guilty to unlawfully discharging a firearm, and the other seven charges against you will be dismissed. It was an intense decision. Malik was able to sit in the courtroom with his family to discuss it. The other nine defendants were sitting there too, with their lawyers. At one point, people started yelling at each other. Malik's family was worried that other defendants would start pointing the finger at Malik in order to get better deals for themselves. Will wanted to fight for his client. He had a plan for how to defend Malik at trial, but that would be risky. If they lost, Will says Malik could end up in prison for anywhere between 10 and 47 years. With a plea deal, Malik would know exactly how many years he would serve. Will says the whole family was torn up about it. Malik was crying, his mom was crying, his brothers and sisters were crying. Malik did not want to take the plea, but his mom begged him to. In the end, he took it. His sentence is 10 years with credit for time already served. In the best possible situation, he'll be out in 6.5 years. He'll be 24. I asked one of the victims of the shooting, the college student we heard from at the beginning of this story, if she kept up with the case at all. And she said, no.
I just let it go all the way. I said, you know, I'm fine. I recovered. I just moved on. Like, I don't want any, like, parts of it. I just let it go.
And does it matter to you if they find the right people and they go to jail?
No, it don't matter. Because there's still people out here killing. I'm going to continue doing that. So you taking away 4 or 5 people in the rest of the city is still bad people. It really don't even matter.
In her mind, locking people up doesn't change how violent New Orleans is, nor does it help her have more faith in the system. Chief Public Defender Derwin Button says he hears this all the time.
When I talk to families of clients over the years, they use words like railroaded, racist, unfair, unjust. It's that idea that they're simply not going to get a fair shake.
Derwin says that's all he wants, a fair shake for his clients. The slowdown was his last resort, a choice that took him 7 years to make after trying everything else, overloading his staff, arguing for different funding, and watching year after year as his budget kept getting smaller and smaller. How does it weigh on you knowing that there are all these people now who are without a public defender because they're on a wait list?
Well, it's terrible and terrifying. It's one of those things that weighs on me and my staff every day. And we think about and keep track of every day folks on the wait list.
And, like, how long are you going to hold out? Like, a year, 2 years?
You know, I think we're basically going to move forward constitutionally, ethically, and professionally. So we're going to stay inside those boundaries. We are simply not going to play this role of blessing an unjust system.
So for the foreseeable future, Derwin is going to continue refusing cases until something really changes. He knows he's putting pressures on the courts and the legislature, and worst of all, poor people waiting in jail without attorneys. But Derwin is forcing the issue. He's forcing people to look at what it would truly cost to properly defend all the people we arrest. Louisiana locks up more of its citizens per capita than any other place in the world. And defending all those people properly, according to the Constitution, is expensive. Right now, most people don't see those costs. Right now, the rubber hits the road in courts and jails, places most people avoid given the option. So Derwin is going to keep loudly pointing at the price tag. And maybe that's the best way to get everyone's attention, to provide them with a healthy amount of sticker shock.
As we're wrapping up this reporting, the City of New Orleans gave the public defenders a little bit more money for next year's budget. It will help them replace some of the 37 staff members let go since last year, including experienced attorneys. But it's just a one-time boost. Meanwhile, that ACLU lawsuit against Derwin's office is still dragging on. A federal judge won't rule on it for months. And when that ruling comes down, it will only say whether it's illegal for Louisiana inmates to sit in jail without a lawyer. It won't solve the public defender budget crisis. But however it turns out, the lawsuit will keep the spotlight on public defense and maybe, maybe illuminate a path to fully funding it someday. As a reminder, to support our work, go to revealnews.org/donate or text DONATE to 63735. We get by with a little help from our friends, so come on, be our friend. Thanks to independent producer Eve Abrams and Eve Tro of WWNO in New Orleans for this episode. And heads up, Eve Abrams also has her own podcast on criminal justice in New Orleans. It's called Unprisoned. You have to check it out. I will definitely be tuning in. Speaking of great podcasts, I should also tell you about Offshore. It's a new podcast from PRX and Honolulu Civil Beat. It's amazing. And what I love about both of these podcasts is it really gives you an understanding of that place. So in Unprisoned, it's New Orleans. And in Offshore, it's the Hawaiian Islands. Two vastly different places. But when you dig deep, it really asks the question of what it means to be an American today. So check it out, Unprisoned and Offshore. Our show was edited by Laura Starczewski. Special thanks to Kira Azor, Nandi Campbell, and John Adcock. We also wanted to thank WHYY in Philadelphia for production support for this week's show. Our sound design team is the Wonder Twins. My man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Claire C. Note Mullen. They had help this week from Peter Kahnheim and Vanessa Lowe. Our head of studio is Krista Scharfenberg. Amy Pyle is our editor-in-chief. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.